Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Every Sunday we get together with a guest from the distance running world,
giving you an insight into the lives and training of some of the UK's best athletes and coaches.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all major podcast streaming services.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast, where we post about our past and present guests, host giveaways, and much more.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Yeah, welcome back, guys. We've got another one for you fans of the coaching pods out there. We spoke to the head of endurance at Loughborough University, Carl Bennett.
Hello, welcome back. A huge weekend of sports. So I hope you're all enjoying it. And if you're anything like me, you've probably done the National Cross and you just want to sit on the couch all day and watch British Indoors, which is probably what I'm going to do. So anyway, enjoy your weekend. Well, I hope you've all enjoyed your weekend and enjoy the podcast. As Lum says, Carl Bennett, I feel like it's a really interesting guest, like, obviously head coach at Loughborough and stuff. And I feel like, you know, we've had Luke Gunnell, we've had James Steele in the past, you know, big high-profile university coaches, high-profile university programs. But, you know, I always feel like Loughborough's been a little bit secretive and no one really knows what goes on at Loughborough unless you're actually out there in the bubble, if you like. People like to refer to Loughborough as. So it's actually really good and, you know, excuse the pun, but the bubble was burst and we found out all about how Loughborough works, the setup there, you know, different performance tiers, you know, training, the numbers, and some fascinating facts such as, you know, they've got seven coaches, distance coaches there, you know, to cater for 120 plus athletes. And I don't think you quite realize the scale of the program until kind of like Carl talks about it. And he talked about the future where they want to be. And he wasn't scared in saying, you know, they want to be one of the best or the best, you know, distance program in the whole of Europe, university program. So they've got big aspirations. So he talks about how they hope to do that. And also we get Carl's thoughts. You know, he's at Loughborough for a reason. He's obviously a very good coach. He's got some huge talents that we're really starting to see come through onto the senior stage now as well. So he kind of talks us through, you know, how to be a good 1500 coach, just a good distance coach, a good coach in general, to be honest with you. And he's someone who's come from the athletics background, not just distance focused. He has a very good knowledge of all disciplines. So that's quite fascinating how he links that back to distance running and middle distance running especially. So look, enjoy the podcast, have a cracking week. And as always, we'll catch you next week, guys.
Right, Carl, first off, just welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on. It's been a bit of a long time coming.
Yeah, thanks, guys. No, really excited to be on.
Yeah, for sure. Me and Matt, we've spoken about the NCAA a lot in this pod before, obviously with the likes of Oregon, who have kind of illustrious histories in terms of university sport. And you've probably gone to the university that maybe the only one in the UK that really has, I'd say, that sort of clear history. You started at Loughborough University probably, when was that, Carl? October, November?
Yeah, I think mid-November, yeah.
Yeah, so head of endurance there. First off, just how the first few months been settling in?
Yeah, really good, actually. So you kind of, like you alluded to it there, that I didn't study at Loughborough, but I know the history that obviously came with it. So obviously, once people found out I got the role, lots of people were having kind of, you know, talking to me about the history and what it was. And I think it's... it's great to understand all of that, because obviously that's the starting point, and that helps us move forward to where we want to take it. And I think the first few months, it's been me kind of just settling in, seeing what the other coaches there have been doing, see what the whole program is about, understanding the amazing things that are happening at the moment. And then kind of the last sort of month, then we've been creating a plan of, well, this is where we are, where would we like to be in, you know, 1 year, 5 years, mm-hmm. 10 years sort of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think with the Loughborough role as well, Carl, when you were applying for it, we'll talk a little bit about how you applied for it and how you got the role. But, you know, did you look at it and think, I can, there's a lot of stuff I want to change there and make a difference? And then in your head, like, since you've got the role, how hard has that been to do?
I think everyone has an idea of a program. Like, obviously, being at Oxford University for 7 years as, you know, almost part-time volunteer sort of coach, but you have an idea of where you want to take a program, but I don't think you fully understand what you can do until you get there. So until I started at Loughborough, I didn't know everything that was happening. So part of the interview process was, you know, almost deliver a 5-year plan. And I delivered the 5-year plan, but as part of my interview, I was asking the interview panel questions, because obviously I didn't know everything that was happening. So it can be easy to sort of make judgments and say, well, I want to change this, this, and this, and this. But then you get there and it's like, oh, right, well, that's already happening. Fantastic. So we don't need to touch on that. And then there's other things where it's kind of, for me, then there's an important part of it. So I do want to change that. And then it's working within that team of how we do that.
How long did that kind of that application process take? When did you first hear about the job and start applying for it before you actually started?
I think there was a huge delay because there was a recruitment freeze at Loughborough, as many universities. So we kind of knew the role was coming out maybe about a year before it actually did. And obviously then, as normal, there's lots of conversations going on in the coaching world of, you know, who are you applying, who's applying, trying to figure out who's actually going to go for it and who the competition is. And then actually when the job came out, I think the interview was maybe about 2 months later. And then that was interview one. And then there was no interview or second interview down on paper. But then I got a call a couple of days later saying that I needed to go for a second interview, where basically the head of performance there wanted to actually interview me as well. And that was Richard Wheater, and didn't want to give the job to someone without him seeing them, how they coach, and interviewing as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned about kind of knowing or hearing whispers about who else is applying. So I guess coaching is one of those fields where you're pretty much going to have a relationship with all the other people applying, or have some knowledge about them compared to other jobs kind of outside of sport.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, I'm not going to say any names, but yeah, I knew everyone that got on it or that applied and got an interview. So again, some of us are really close. So we were actually helping each other out and talking about the interview process and what, and sharing ideas. Cause again, that's, you know, I don't think there's any secrets out there. I think we should all be sharing ideas. So there were some conversations even before the interviews of, like I say, even helping each other out and what we were going to do as part of that interview process. But yeah, it was quite interesting then of almost waiting to see who got the role of, you know, WhatsApp messages of, you know, have you heard anything? Have you heard anything? All that kind of stuff.
That sounds, well, very mature of you all then.
Maybe not everyone, but the majority of people.
Yeah, yeah. When you got the role, presumably, you know, you're in quite a long-term transition phase. You might still be in it. And what were kind of the immediate differences from maybe how you were coaching at Oxford, or, you know, individually with certain people, to sort of, you know, Loughborough?
Yeah, we're definitely still in, if we're calling it a transition period, I'm not sure what it's called, but yeah, definitely. obviously there's, Bill Foster, Chris and Sonia McGeorge, that there is like the kind of, the other main coaches. And then we have three assistant coaches as well doing their qualifications. So Frank Baddick, Paul Goodall, and Caroline P. Plateau Johnson. I'm gonna always get mixed up on the surname now of what she goes by. So there's kind of seven of us there now that are coaches, which I'm 99% sure that's the most of any university in this country in terms of actually on the ground coaches. So that's a fantastic thing. And obviously I've come from Oxford where it was just me sort of going up there three times a week, four times a week when I first started for a couple of hours. So now obviously there's seven coaches there on site at every session working with the athletes. So that's a huge change for me personally. And I think going forward, that's a massive strength that we have where total numbers, potentially we, if all the male and females all turned up, we might be at maybe 120 to 140 athletes, which if you're trying to do that by yourself, where it's almost an impossible job, where we've got seven coaches. So for me going forward, that kind of athlete to having a lead Loughborough coach could be done quite easily, and they can have that quality and that student experience that we all either had or wanted as athletes at a university.
See, that's really interesting. How do you guys, you know, communicate with one another? And like, obviously there is kind of a little bit of a pecking order with a lead coach and an athlete from home who maybe has a home coach. Will they just take, you know, just advice off an assistant coach a little bit more and work with them? Quite interested to see the sort of dynamic then.
Yeah, in terms of how I've approached it since I've started is we've been having meetings together, like with all the coaches. So we'll discuss training and we'll go through a sort of a 4-week plan for a general program for the athletes. And then that will be tweaked for individuals who have a more of a lead coach, depending on what they've got coming up. So, you know, we've just had Bucks Cross and Bucks Indoors. So obviously, as you guys know, athletes programs have to be changed and they have to do things specific to them. So we'll have that general program, but then everything will kind of be individualized to that. For me personally, and I've said this before, I don't really like the term home coach because they are their coach.
Yeah.
So, and I use it because we have to, because it's no one, if you just say coach, no one, everyone's like, oh, who is that, you or is that the home coach? So we all say home coach, but for me, they're still the coach and they're still fully involved in working with that athlete and that program. For my aim in Loughborough and how that lead Loughborough coach works, that will be kind of on a spectrum of they might potentially take over the lead coach role with that athlete. And if that's what the home coach and the athlete want, that's absolutely fine. And that can be discussed and agreed beforehand. And then right at the other end, you'll have an athlete that is doing everything that their home coach is setting. And we're there just to kind of help whenever they need it, or let them know when, you know, what our training program is and things like that as well. And to me, that we don't need to be protective on that, that it can work in many different ways there.
That's awesome. And if an athlete who is doing, you know, training set from, you know, their coach back home, will you guys, you know, will you guys be at the track? Will you have a watch on it? Or is that just kind of left for them to do on their own?
kind of up to them and what they want.
Right. So you can accommodate either.
Yeah, we only, from my understanding, we only have one athlete at the moment that likes to do everything themselves. So they won't sort of contact me when they're doing a session. They'll just crack on and they'll get that done and they're having success. So again, to me, if it's working, that's absolutely fine. Other athletes will contact me or one of the other lead coaches and say, oh, actually, I need to train at, you know, an hour earlier today, is anyone around there to get a clock on that? And that's, say, absolutely fine as well.
Yeah, I guess it kind of defeats the point, would you say, going to Loughborough and not getting involved, you know, with the coaches at Loughborough and the team and the athletes at Loughborough, considering, like you said, you've got 120 odd runners, seven coaches. It would kind of just make sense to, you know, submerge yourself in that culture.
Yeah, I think I'd like athletes to be involved in that program, of course, as I think any you know, you've had conversations with other university coaches, I'm sure, as they would like to be. We know the benefits of being involved in a group and a team environment. But there's, for me, you can quite easily tweak sessions or have one session where, depending on the time of the year it is, that say on a Tuesday that they've jumped in with the group session because it's November and actually they're aiming for July, so that works for them. But then come May, on that Saturday, they might want to be doing their own session. And, you know, when I worked at Oxford, sometimes we would have four or five track sessions going on, which is manic when you're the only one there. But as we've alluded to, when we've got seven coaches, we can comfortably have seven sessions going on. And that shouldn't really, to me, that's not a problem going forward with that.
It sounds great in terms of all the individualized stuff you have, but it also sounds like a bit of a logistical nightmare. How does that kind of influence how you have to spend your time? Because I know as coaches, like we all want to spend our time actually coaching on the ground, but there's so many things behind that around organizing things, organizing athletes, organizing assistant coaches and other coaches. How much of your time do you kind of have to split between doing those in a role like yours?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it will always change as well, maybe even week to week, but definitely the longer I'm just for myself, the longer I'm there at Loughborough, potentially the more athletes, individual athletes I'm going to be coaching. Well, obviously at the moment I've just started, so it's more of me at the moment. The majority of my time is looking at that overall program, and that 5-year plan, and recruitment obviously is a massive thing because starting in mid-November, a lot of athletes have already made decisions on uni. So I've had a lot of conversations with athletes of don't make that decision, come up to Loughborough and, you know, almost showing what we can do for them and their coaches. But I try and almost have sort of coaching days and non-coaching days. Now, I coach every day, so I'm going to almost say, yeah, it's impossible to have a non-coaching day. But say, for example, a Tuesday for me, if that's one of our main sessions, then I try and make sure that if I need to be free all day, I'm free all day and I can run sessions all day if I need to. Where on a Monday is more of a physical prep, strength and conditioning day in the evening. So I've got all day to do any kind of admin work, phone calls, meeting with athletes that we need to have. And then I'll coach in the evening. And that's kind of how I'm looking at balancing days at the moment.
I want to touch upon that recruitment side of things more in a bit, but just do you mind sharing with us some of those goals that you mentioned for the program itself, like your 5-year, 10-year goal?
Yeah, sure. The one of the things that we've looked at changing already is the history of Loughborough is a very split male-female. So they didn't join in if ever or a lot together. So one thing we've done already is start to have group sessions, and Chris, Sonia and Bill have been, you know, fantastic with that as well. There's been no sort of, you know, backlash from that at all. They've been really keen for it and they've seen the benefits already of doing that. And we're going to look at incorporating that. It won't be every session because just we can't with the numbers. Yeah. You know, for me, we all of us are in agreement. We don't want 120, 140 on the track at the same time, because even with seven coaches, that's still a bit of a nightmare. And I know other universities or other clubs do that. But again, it's looking at, in a way, the keeping that quality of coaching up. But, you know, whether that might be once every 2 weeks, once every month, where that's what we've done so far is on a Saturday, we've all met. And they've all done kind of a similar session with lots of tweaks, obviously, and all the coaches have come out together and supported the men and women. So I'm hopefully already the athletes are seeing a bit of a change there of, you know, it's not from the male side, for example, oh, that's Bill, that's the female coach. I can't talk to him or say hello to him. And vice versa with Chris and Sonia. I think being at the Bucks Cross Country Champs, the team environment was amazing. The huddle for the first time included like the men and women before the first women's B race, where normally that would be separate. And I say all the coaches were there and supporting, you know, both male and female, not matter who they coach. So I think that's kind of, for me, the something I've tried to almost change and steer already. The longer term plans, it's kind of looking at more metrics of what program we want to be and how we're going to look at almost holding ourselves accountable for that. So a couple of the metrics that I've discussed with the team and that we're going to get more detail in is what that looks like on the ground. So injury rates for me is quite a key one of there's been no monitoring of that in the past, and I would like to monitor that. Obviously the physio team is fantastic, strength and conditioning team is fantastic, and they would look at monitoring that. And we've got some great screening tools that we can almost look at when an athlete is ready to return to run. Previously, some of the screening tools that they might have gone through and the metrics they would have hit there. But just generally, that's not been tracked. So I would like to track that, because again, as a student experience, if you spent 2 out of your 3 years injured, then that's not going to be a positive experience. I think an individual athlete's improvement over their time at uni is a key one. So it might not all happen in the first year, but actually by the time they leave, if they've made a drastic improvement, that's something I want to see. And something that we discussed in the last team meeting. So we meet every Wednesday with all the lead coaches. So sprints, jumps, throws. And something we discussed there was actually then comparing ourselves against other universities. So if you go to X university and their improvement rate is 100% and their injury rate is 0%, then we need to compare ourselves against that. Because what my main goal that I said in the interview was, I want to be the best endurance program in Europe. And we can't even be the best program in the UK if we're not comparing ourselves against the other big universities.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really interesting point where you're looking at the injury rates, because yeah, I think everyone knows at university that does happen a lot, doesn't it? You know, someone will get injured and they are sidelined for 2 out of the 3 years, and they kind of just get, I think university is a place, it's quite easy to hide as well. And they, you know, you just don't turn up to training and you can just hide. So do you also plan on like offering a bit of support when they are injured then?
Yes. So as most universities, we kind of have, I guess, a tiered system. So we have scholars, performance A and performance B on, and they're all athletes on the performance program. So I think we have about 30 to 35 athletes on that performance program. So they'll all get support anyway, all the time throughout the year from the physio, strength and conditioning team, sports psych, nutritionist. The good thing that I've seen there that's been the work done by Chris, Sonia and Bill before I've even got there is they know that's not good enough, because that's 30 athletes out of, say, the 120 I mentioned. So how do then they look at the non-performance athletes? So now there's a lot of workshops happening. So say on strength and conditioning, the team's been great at delivering a workshop that then the athletes can take things away, so that if they as kind of injury prevention work, so they can help with that. One thing that we're looking at doing, and the athletes have done it in small groups, but we're looking at doing it in much bigger spaces, looking at having cross training sessions. So whether that's aqua jogging sessions for athletes that are, well, injured or not injured, because some of this is a good thing that athletes do anyway, but and then meeting up for, you know, almost a spin session or an elliptical session that they can all do together. So that kind of social and team environment is all there and they feel supported, that it's not, I'm injured, I can't speak to the coaches and I'm going to be on the bike for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, that is actually a great idea. You know, like a group session, cross training, just like you have the outdoor sessions. Just interested to note the performance tiers. Like, is there a time people have to run to get on that, you know, performance list, or is it an achievement they have to do? I'm just wondering what sort of level they have to be to get on there, sort of male and female.
Yeah, at the moment they're set times for every event. We are looking with the program manager and the lead coaches. We are looking at changing them, because we're all kind of newer to the role, so we're not sure how they were exactly done, you know, 20 years ago, whether it was compared to Bucks medal times or the top 10 in the country, or, you know, where these kind of times came from. But at the moment, yeah, there's a performance B time, a performance A time, and then to get a scholarship is kind of times, but also if, you know, if people have been at, you know, Eurocross, for example, then obviously then a scholarship might come there as well. And that's kind of how it's discussed at the moment. One thing that I've done in that recruitment space is kind of push that as much as I can. So I'm trying to take as much of the scholarship money as I can into endurance. I'm trying to have as many scholars, as many performance A athletes as I can, which obviously on paper sounds great, but we need to make sure that the support is in place for when they get here, that we don't have 100 scholars and all of a sudden the strength and conditioning coach says they can't work with 50 of them because they're too busy. And things like that. So we need to make sure that when we are bringing athletes in, all of that support is in place.
Are you allowed to share their performance times?
Maybe for athletes out there. They're on the website. They're not hidden at all. They're on the website. So athletes will contact me and say, I would like to, you know, apply for the performance program. I'm currently running a performance B time, but I think this summer I could run a performance A time. So they're all on that. So as an example, I think the men's performance A is, I want to say 3:48 off the top of my head. Don't hold me to that. Check them on the website and then we can discuss it, I suppose.
Yeah. I just want to track back a bit. You mentioned the injury idea and tracking that. I think that's a really interesting thing to look at, particularly in terms of, like you said, a student experience. And I'm sure you won't mind me saying, but you've said to me before that if an athlete you coach gets injured, you look at that as almost a coaching mistake from yourself rather than this is just a bit of bad luck. Talk to me about that mentality, because I think often coaches sort of think, oh, well, they maybe not done the right things or it's just a bit unlucky.
Yeah, I think there's both ends to it. I think if an athlete is injured, I think it's the coach that needs to look at the program and how they've been working and interacting with the athlete first. I think that's the starting point of if, you know, because we're not sure why that injury has come about. So I'm working with an athlete at the moment and it was just during a track session, for example, something kind of flared up and we're not sure why that is. So we obviously need to dig into why this has happened. So I'm not saying it's always the coach's fault. Absolutely not. We all know that, especially at university, athletes are definitely not going to have always the best lifestyle that they should have, which can obviously lead potentially to an injury as well. But I think as a coach, you've got that athlete put their trust in you and they put their responsibility in you to help guide their kind of career. So we need to be doing everything we can so that they don't get injured. Now, we're in one of the worst sports for injury, so it's going to happen. An athlete will get injured, but we need to, I guess, it's being as proactive as we can of trying to limit the injury rates as soon as we can, rather than almost being reactive to an injury. Because the longer we can keep an athlete running, theoretically, the faster they're going to be when they want to compete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, is it, I mean, one of the things with injuries is being able to keep an eye on an athlete, you know, when they're training, like you say, you're able to look at them and think maybe they're just overcooking it a little bit. And I think as a training program and just in general, how do you accommodate, you know, 120 odd athletes, you know, where do you sort of start, you know, because they've all got different goals and they're all different abilities.
Yeah. The longer term plan, I kind of touched on before a bit about everyone having, a lead Loughborough coach, and say that can work on that spectrum that I mentioned before. But if out of them, say 120, 140, we might have 80 that are them kind of serious, dedicated ones that they want a lead coach and they want to turn up, you know, every day and do the best that they can and improve. So for me, with 7 coaches, we can have 15 athletes each as that kind of a lead coach, and we can comfortably provide the quality we need for them 15 athletes, and that's something that the team already do, which is amazing, and of how often they meet with athletes and have these conversations and tweak their training programs that they need to. That's already happening. It's just looking at the way I worded it, Tevlip, is can I make their life a little bit easier of rather than them have 30 athletes? Can we bring that down a little bit so that then the coach's time is not as pulled in different, almost their workload is reduced a little bit as well, and say that the quality will just go up then. Mm-hmm. In terms of, I guess, the training session. So we were at the track on Tuesday, and say there was five coaches out on that track session with the guys, and there was, I reckon, 60 guys. So they're all then split up into groups. So there might be 10 to 15 in each group. And we had sort of two main sessions going on, an endurance session and a middle distance session going on. And you can see then all the coaches are just almost, we're timing one of them groups. So for me, it can be quite easy of looking at them athletes, how they're moving, how they're progressing throughout that session with obviously the targets that we've set beforehand and the goals we've set beforehand, and then making adjustments of, you know, is that enough now? Do we need to back off? Or with some of the athletes, it was the way we ran the session was almost be controlled at the start and then hit it hard at the end, and making sure that they know almost on what rep they're ready to go for that. So that's the kind of on the ground way that we sort of monitor that.
Mm-hmm. What about going into to Bucks comps then? Because obviously you've just had indoors across a few weeks ago. Loughborough take a massive team to these events. So how do you manage that? And also how did they go from your perspective?
The sort of captains and vice captains are great as well, but becoming involved in that logistical side of how many athletes that we're taking there. I think for me, the biggest thing was, as we said in the like cross country team meeting beforehand, it's the main thing I wanted to see from it is that team atmosphere, that enthusiasm. You know, they should be turning up to training and turning up to Bucks excited, you know, to put on a Loughborough vest and compete for that university. So that's the starting point. If that happens, and I think almost the training that they've done anyway, the performance is going to take care of themselves a little bit. And I think overall, we've obviously had a massively successful day at Bucks Cross. Obviously, the women absolutely dominated the race, which was beforehand. It's quite interesting. Beforehand, our team and the other university coaches, we all basically were saying this is going to be the closest Bucks team competition in the men's and the women's race that there's ever been. Mm. And then we kind of walked away with the women's, and obviously Birmingham walked away with the men's comfortably. And it was a bit of a surprise it happened in that way. I think overall, we were a few men down in the A team, but, you know, like we've said before, that's injuries, that happens. You kind of have to roll with that and make the changes. So I think everyone in that A race for our men's team did as well as they could have done. And they performed well. You're just not going to beat that Birmingham team that turned up on the day and had, well, maybe all six of them performing at the highest level that they've ever performed at. And I think it's the lowest points score there's most probably ever been from a men's team potentially. So I think overall, though, we're really happy. And again, that gives us a great starting point of, like I said before, about comparing against other universities, that it's quite easy now to turn around to their men and say, well, that's what it takes to win. So what do we do now? Where does the plan go and how do we change? Because it's not that what we're currently doing isn't good enough. It's just that bar's gone up, that level's gone up, and we need to rise to it.
Yeah. I think it's quite good there. You guys do have a challenge as well, at least with Birmingham and St. Mary's as well. Because I think, you know, the numbers Loughborough have and the quality they get there, you can just end up running away with everything all the time.
Yeah. And what I would say, and I think I've mentioned this to Ollie before as well, like all the kind of pre-Bucks always comes out as, you know, the top three. Here it is, the top three universities. And they kind of discount the other universities as well. Mm-hmm. And especially on the men's side, well, and on the women's side as well, if you look back on the top three teams, it's very rare that it's been a top three, like the Birmingham, Loughborough and St. Mary's. Mm-hmm. Oxford, Cambridge, I think Edinburgh women's as well, like got in there this year as a team medal. So I think from the outside, people look at that as a top three, but everyone else thinks there could be six, seven, eight universities. And that's only going to get harder and harder as more universities start to have better programs as well, and again start to rise to that level. So I think it's, like I say, it's very easy to think, okay, we just need to beat Birmingham and then we've won the gold. But I don't think that's the case going forward. I think, you know, being at Oxford, I've had a great relationship with Phil O'Dell at Cambridge, and we would always, before Bucks, be like, you know, look, our teams are looking good, we're going for a medal, but no one else would be talking about Oxford or Cambridge. But we won, I think, two bronze medals. I'm going to say 2017, 2018, but that's most probably wrong, but around then. And even this year, Cambridge had phenomenally strong teams out as well. So I think university athletics, I think, is getting stronger. And like I've said before, one of my main goals is to be the best endurance program in Europe. And I think having that competitiveness against the other universities is only going to help that.
Mm. On the strength of university athletics, then, you mentioned the scholars earlier. I think, am I right in saying at Loughborough, there's a rule that if you're a scholar, you have to compete at one or two Bucks comps throughout a year?
Strongly encouraged to compete in, either Bucks. Like,
I mean, for me, that's a great rule. And I think to ever compete with, say, you mentioned Europe, but if you ever want to compete with the likes of the US, you've got to have your best athletes competing for the university and the university competitions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, obviously, indoors is always a tricky one. If it's not in your plan, we're not going to force people to do it. But something, again, that I want to change going forward is actually knowing athletes' plans a little bit better in November. So then we kind of already know who's hitting indoors, who's hitting cross country, and we can start to plan that. And if there are some conversations we need to have with athletes of, well, hang on, this, to some extent, you know, selfishly, you're not scoring points for the team. So is there a way we can speak to yourself and your coach and looking at how we get you to a position that, you know, you should be in the scoring team, say indoors. So can you do indoors instead, kind of thing? I think outdoors, when I'm looking at what the team that we're going to enter for outdoors and other universities, I think, again, people keep talking and they always mention, and we're never going to be like NCAA, I don't think, because at the moment there's just not going to be the money invested. But when we look at, especially I think in the 800 and 1500 meter men and women's finals, I think, I honestly think some people will be shocked at the standard of the finals this year.
Yeah, I mean, the 1500, I mean, you could be looking at being a 3:43 man and you might not make it into the final.
we potentially got athletes that are 3:43 that won't make our team.
Yeah, and that's four men can go, right?
Yeah, and that's the strength that we have. And obviously part of my role with the other coaches is working at, well, how do we, or to some extent, how do we win most medals? So what is the best team that we can put in? So again, in that 8:15, we've got athletes that can do both. So then there's conversations there of, well, actually, what do you want to do? But then also the other side of it is, well, for us, actually, you doing the 800 is a better option because we've got backup in the 15 and we can have then four athletes in the final competing for medals. But yeah, honestly, like you say, I think the standard issue is just going to be off the chain. And I think it's really encouraging. And hopefully that only gets stronger every year.
Is that frustrating for you and some of the athletes that you could be a really good runner and potentially never compete for your university indoors or outdoors? Do you think Bucks should potentially change the way, you know, we run Bucks and maybe make like a bit more of a deal out of standards and qualifying times to get into Bucks, especially outdoors?
It's not something I've really thought about, to be honest, there on the sort of the standard side. I think as an individual uni, you have to have them high standards. And that comes in when that 18-year-old, you know, say we're trying to recruit some of the best athletes in the country at the moment. When they come in, they know their starting point. They know who's in their training group. You can start to build that plan. And it might be that for the first year or even the first 2 years, they're not making the team because of that standard. But we want to see that progression through that come their third or fourth year. That's when they're, you know, in the Bucks teams, and that's when they're making the finals and winning medals. You don't have to do it all in your first year. I think it's always tricky if you say, or if you go down the line of performance times, because that could limit obviously some universities where they don't get to enter athletes. Now, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I've not say not something I've actually thought about before. Something we have looked, and we're speaking to sort of the British athletics now, is on the para side. So there's a wheelchair 800 meters, but there's not a indoors or outdoors. There's not a para race for a lot of the athletes, which for me is not good enough. So we are looking at how we've kind of given options of, can we have a para distance sort of championships when the 10,000 meters is on? So that's the week before the main Bucks track and field champs, I think on the 23rd of April. Can we do that there? Or actually, can we enter a fifth athlete in, say, in the 1500, we've got Luke Nuttall, for example, who won't get to compete at Bucks, but he's a, you know, European medalist, a phenomenal athlete. Can we almost enter a fifth athlete as a power athlete, but they get to compete at the Bucks Championships? So I know there's discussions going on there of how we can make that work. But yeah, I'm not sure on your question, Matt, how, what's the best there. I think if the standard wasn't there in finals, then that's something I think they do need to look at. Obviously, if, like you say, if you've got a 3:43 athlete that can make a final and they're not, they can't be there because they're the fifth at our university.
Yeah.
Then, but you know, there's a 4-minute person getting in from a different uni, then that is something to look at.
Mm.
It's tough though, because if you compare to other sports, like say you went to Loughborough to play hockey or rugby, you're not getting in the first team, even if you're making first teams at a lot of other institutions. So I guess it is similar.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when, like now I'm going through recruiting athletes, we're not lying to them, telling them that, oh, if you come, you'll be straight in that box A team and this. No. If anything, it's the other way around. We're showing them of how high our standards are.
Mm.
And again, in 5 years' time, where I think the program will be, that it will almost be that common knowledge of, well, I know I'm going into Loughborough. I'm not going to be making these A teams in my first year, I say maybe even second year, but that's my goal and that's what I want to get to come my, you know, third, fourth year.
Mm. Yeah, I think going forward, I think if Bucks really wants to just promote itself a little bit more and really, you know, raise the standard as a stepping stone in our sport, I think it, you know, it could potentially let in, you know, just more higher quality athletes at these meets, you know, because like I say, Loughborough could have 8 people running in the 1500, and it would just, I think it would raise the bar and it would mean a lot more, and the status of Bucks in general would be a lot higher.
Yeah, there could be a way of looking at
Yeah,
I was just gonna say, it could be a way of looking at almost that, like you say, ranking system to some extent, of, you know, like they're doing the worlds and things now, of if you've got an athlete that's ranked extremely high and they've got the times and stuff, then is there 10, 20 extra places for these athletes that Bucks will let enter? Yeah. Because again, for most events, it's only going to take an extra 5-10 minutes to run an extra heat. It's not that much more time invested.
Mm. Agreed.
Let's chat about the recruitment then, because we've mentioned it a little bit. And I think I know the answer, but I was going to ask you, did Loughborough even have to recruit?
100%. One of the things that, obviously, unfortunately, with George passing, that obviously that is something that can easily go under the cracks of that, because no one was there doing it. And when you've got other people in other institutions that are pushing recruitment, then I think it would be wrong of us just to say we're Loughborough, we're going to have people come in. Of course we will, but to me, if when we say about setting goals and things like that, from my end, if I haven't at least, and it was hard this year, like say, because I've only started in November, so a lot of athletes had, you know, already applied or already started making decisions. But going forward, if I haven't spoke to the top 20 athletes in every event, then I don't think I'm doing my job well enough. Now that's just a conversation with that athlete and that coach. And it might be out in the Euros, I spoke with an athlete, parent and coach, and they wanted to study medicine. Well, we don't do that at Loughborough. So it was, oh, fantastic, let's just have a chat. Where are you looking at applying to? And there's no negative with that. It's that, well, you're doing a course we don't study. So if you need any advice from me of where's best to go, I can help with that. And that's a little bit part of my, I guess, job with England Athletics with the talent programs as well. But yeah, to me, how we look at it, if we just call it recruitment, but I need to be doing the best job I can with that, because I think the university deserves that and the athletes we currently have deserve to have better training partners as well within that.
Wow, so you will reach out to, like you say, the top 20 or so in each distance event.
So that's the plan going forward. This year's been a bit, again, like I say, reactive. Yeah. We get, for example, in our admissions team, we'll get a monthly email of anyone who's applied. And when they apply, they basically tick a box that says athletics and performance. Mm. Then that comes through to us. So I've just got a huge list of athletes, you know, email addresses. And then I will then sit and go through. I might know them already, but I'd sit and go through Para 10s, their results, where they might sit, so that we've almost got that best case scenario. These are the scholars we're bringing in, performance A, performance B, and non-performance as well. But going forward, and I've said this to a lot of the coaches as well, that I want to build better relationships with, of we're just here to chat whenever you want to. So if it's a phone call of just what we can potentially, you know, what that athlete's experience will be like if they come to Loughborough, then we can talk about that. And if it's just a general, well, actually, I'm not sure where I'm applying, I need some help, then we're here for that as well.
Sounds like Loughborough really raising the bar, to be honest. I think it's only a good thing because it, you know, it'll be a knock-on effect. I know Birmingham are doing the same, and I think, you know, many other unis will start to do a similar sort of thing.
Yeah, I think what I'd say is we're, like, for me, being at Loughborough now, just walking into the high pack, sometimes there's just a buzz and there's an excitement. Obviously we have British Athletics staff there as well, and sometimes I'll just go down onto the track and just watch some of these, you know, coaches run sessions and just literally watch how they do it, and if I can learn and if I can improve off them. But there's just an excitement now when you walk into that high pack or go onto the track. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm not saying to you guys, and I didn't say it in my interviews, of I want to be the best endurance program in Europe in 5 years. There's things we need to change and there's things we need to do to get there. I'm not just saying that to help with recruitment. I honestly believe we can do that, and the team all the way up to the head of performance believes that we can do that as well. So we have the backing of the whole university to go and do that. And I think we've got the coaches there. Like I say, we've got 7 coaches currently at the moment. That only might increase. And we've got a phenomenal support system from, like I say, strength and conditioning all the way through to, you know, sports psychology, nutrition. So what we can provide athletes is at a high standard, and that's only going to increase and get better as well.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're doing some great things. You touched upon it, I think, couple of questions ago, but Loughborough's not your only role in athletics, Carl. Like, you also do some work with England Athletics and London Marathon, I believe. Do you mind just talking us through those sorts of roles and what else you do in your week?
Yeah, sure. So I guess I'm a talent lead or talent event lead at the moment. So that will be working on the youth talent program, junior talent program. So that basically incorporates completing some, like, individual action plans with athletes and coaches sort of 3-4 times a year, and being their point of contact. And then we also have 3 national training days spread throughout the year for the youth talent program, 2 for the junior talent program. And then more recently, I've taken over Helen Clitheroe's role of the point of contact for the London Marathon athletes on there. So I've just started that role recently. So I've just started having a few conversations with those athletes as well. And I guess in a nutshell, that England Athletic role is just to see if we can, I guess one side of it is with athletes. Can we provide any support to athletes or help athletes out? But then the other side of it that I'm really passionate about is obviously with coaches and how we can provide opportunities for coaches to continue to learn, because that's something I had, well, very early on in my career, but I still have now with coaches and mentors. And because there's no set structure anymore for that, then I think it's part of our role is to make sure that there's a safe space that athletes and coaches can just share ideas and share challenges that they're having, and help each other out. Because for everyone in my circle as coaches, all we want is athletes and you know, Great Britain to be winning Olympic medals at the end in that success element. And the more we share ideas and the more we learn off each other, the quicker and that's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think we are, you know, credit to England Athletics, we are seeing a little bit more. Yeah, they do seem to be a bit more proactive. I think they've seen Welsh Athletics and Scottish Athletics and they are, you know, up in their game, if you like. As like a coach then, you know, how can they get that sort of extra development off you guys at England Athletics at the moment?
I think the Athletics Hub has been a massive thing, which obviously kicked off more through COVID. So if you went onto the Athletics Hub now, I'm not sure how many presentations are on there specific to endurance or just general athletics, but way over 100. And they're all there forever. So you can go back and look at, you know, a presentation that someone did on, I don't know, threshold training, and it will be there for as long as coaches need it. So that's a huge thing and a huge starting point. And then for me on the mentoring side, anyone who's on a talent program, so from the youth talent program, I think overall per year group, I think there's maybe 60 to 70 athletes across England and their coaches that are on the youth talent program. So again, they have them three training weekends spread throughout the year, but also their individual action plans, and they have mine and other coaches that I work with on there, such as Joe Wilkinson that I run the program with. They've got our numbers and emails, so we'll get constant kind of calls and emails of help, or, you know, if they need something specific. So if it might be that someone needs some specific steeplechase help, then we'll point them in the right direction for there as well.
Okay, that's cool. And then just moving on a little bit, look, you're in the Loughborough role for a reason. You're obviously a very good coach. And I kind of said to Ollie before, I was like, let's make sure we talk to him about his coaching beliefs and, you know, what he thinks makes a good coach and, you know, what makes a good sort of, you know, distance athlete, middle distance athlete, for example. So just want to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. I think the first thing I'd say on like sort of how I approached coaching is I had Bud Bodara and Dave Sunderland were like my mentors when I first started out getting involved in coaching. And one of the biggest lessons I've learned off them is don't make it about yourself as the coach. Like, there's no ego, there's no power in this. It's about the athlete and it's about their development. And that's something I think I'll always take in my coaching, and I'll always push forward with that, that it's not about us at all. It's about the athletes. I am very big on building a relationship with an athlete and then providing them, I'll say, with an individual plan. We all know that that incorporates big group sessions at times and that's what they need and things, but that athlete needs a clear plan and a clear direction of where they're going. You know, coaching week from week, we know doesn't work. And there's certain times you have to be a bit of adaptable with that. If athletes are injured, then that might be, you know, you're going it day by day to see how they're recovering. But I think having that longer term plan, and that might be a 4-year plan, is vital for that athlete to kind of get that clear picture in their head of where they're going. So I think that's the kind of my overall philosophy with that. I do think, and I know it's going against potentially currently what might be happening with some athletes, but like a long-term plan and not pushing too early and rushing. I think patience is a massive thing. And if you're 18 years old and you're running some phenomenally fast times, but the training is balanced with that, and there's still that, you know, that long-term plan in that they want to still be hitting PBs when they're 28 and 30, then that's fantastic. But I don't think young athletes should almost be sacrificing their mid-20s and late 20s just to have early success. I personally don't think that works. So that's a big thing that on the talent program we try and go through, is get athletes to understand of what training they're currently doing and then how is that going to look next year and how does that look in 4 years and how are they going to progress training? Because it's very easy, obviously, like I say, in today's climate to look at social media, and if you believe everything that athletes put on social media, and just follow that, run 100 mile a week and everything will be good, and you'll get to the level you want to get to. And I think in terms of an athlete level, it's just really individual. You know, Ollie knows like a coach, say Ben West, for example, because of where he is with sort of his injury rate. Sometimes he's 25, 30 mile a week. So I think before Eurocross, which was the best shape he's ever been in his life, it's a shame that wasn't track season, but because it would have been, he would have gone really, really well. That, you know, I think, yeah, 30, 35 mile a week, that's all he was on. And we didn't even push the speed element. So I think we have an idea of what he needs rather than thinking, right, he has to be running 60, 70 mile a week and he has to be doing all this speed training if he wants to run, you know, 335, 336 this summer. But then there are other athletes that I work with that 30 mile a week won't cut it. And that's not going to work. And they have to be running 60, 70 mile a week and they have to be doing long threshold runs and, you know, them high endurance aerobic training sessions. So I think the quicker you can work with that athlete of looking at, okay, what do they need and how are they going to progress, then the job becomes easier. As we all know, as a coach, it's not easy and it's never easy. But I guess in a nutshell, what I'm saying there, I suppose, is we're looking at coaching an athlete. I don't have a set program that I then put onto that athlete and expect that athlete to just follow. It's more of, I create a program for that athlete.
Do you think early success is better than like no success, for example? Because I know, like, obviously quite topical at the moment is, you know, we're in a generation, I think like 10, 15 years ago, play the long game. But, you know, we know how hard it is to actually, you know, in an ideal world, everyone peaks when they're 28, but we know how hard it is to actually do that.
Yeah. And I think I know you guys have discussed it a lot. And I know we probably won't have time to go into it, but on the funding side that, yeah, if you're 21 years old and you're still running 3:45, then obviously no one's offering you a deal. So you can't go full time and things like that. But like I said before, for me, it's early success is great. It's, are you sacrificing anything to get that early success? Right. And to me, if you peak at 20 and you never run a personal best again, then I'm not sure you're going to have the best enjoyment of your career through that. Where if you look at, I think, the athletes that are coming through now from Great Britain, and that are doing really well, I don't think any of them have sacrificed anything as a young athlete to get to where they are. I think they're all with fantastic coaches and you're going to see them continue to develop. And like even listening to a podcast the other week with, you know, Josh Kerr's coach, and he was saying that, you know, he just ran 3:29 in the summer, but they only really pushed it and went to the well like two or three times before that race. And that's, to me, that's a fantastic coach working with an athlete and understanding that they could have gone all out and they could have maybe won the gold, but that could have then sacrificed things later in his career. And they know that he's still a young athlete and where he wants to get to. So that's my philosophy. I know I'm always going to be challenged on that. And I have these conversations quite a lot with coaches that don't believe that, and they will push young athletes hard. And that, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that's not my view and sort of my philosophy on coaching.
Yeah. Carl, I think an interesting thing about you is you've pretty much coached every event in the sport, field events included, or a few of them as well. Cause obviously, like, when I first met you, you're part of a multi-events group. And I know you still like had a lot of influence with the distance stuff. But how beneficial do you think that is, obviously, to have this kind of rounded view of training and different types of like training experiences? Obviously mentioned Ben's on low mileage, and I'm sure you've got other guys and girls on high mileage as well.
Yeah, for me, part of the reason that, you know, when I was involved with a guy called Laurie Wilkinson, who's a good friend of mine, and we ran that combined event group together, and we had, say, I still had endurance athletes part of that group as well. But for me, it's the more you can learn as a coach, obviously, the better coach you're going to be. So again, I learned this early on in my career, that the more you can take from other event groups, the better it's going to be. And that's different sports as well. So, you know, I had a period of working with the FA as a sports scientist and seeing how the coaches you know, in a completely different environment, seeing how they work and how they coach, how they talk and influence athletes is a massive learning curve that for me you have to go through. So one of the best things I think I ever did was get involved in sprint coaching and get involved in having a sprint mentor. And that's something that I still do now and still speak to coaches, because what we're looking at, you know, and if we just say 800-1500 meter runners, you've got to run bloody quick. And mechanics and biomechanics are a huge part of that. And if I never got involved in the sprint world, I don't think I'd know what good running technique is or what it should look like or how we could improve it. So there, yeah, I think it's for me, for any, I'm not going to say like younger coach coming through, but any new developing coach coming through, is yet when you go to your local club, at least once a month, get in a different event group, even if you just stand and watch and just see how they work. And different coaches are always going to spot different things and work in different ways, and learning that is just going to be, I think, good for your overall career.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite event to coach then? Obviously we know it'll be a distance one, but like, is it the 15, the 5, the 8?
I think I'm always going to favor the 1500. I think just like I grew up with like HML Garouge, and I think just falling in love with him and watching him run the 1500 is, I think that will always kind of stay with me. But to me, it's more about the athlete and watching them progress and develop. Whatever level that is, I'm always going to coach, I think, every level. I don't think I'll ever go into the full elite world and not coach kind of all abilities. I think I'd like to keep that in. So yeah, I think the 1500 would be my favorite event, but I think more it's just that joy you get out of seeing an athlete improve and enjoying their process.
Best 1500 meter session to do? Have you got like a magical 15 session? I know there's no such thing, but
there's no such thing.
Favorite one then? What's your favorite, Carl?
Coaches have that one where they can tell an athlete's in shape if they nail a certain session, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd say again that's on the athlete. Like I knew Ben was in phenomenal 1500 meter shape before Euros when we were doing, I think it was like K reps. And I knew he was, if we chucked him on a track, now he'd run a PB in the 1500.
Right.
But yeah, for me, if you cruise in, if you can cruise 500s at 1500 meter pace off not a big recovery, then I think, you know, you're in phenomenal shape. I do think that, when we look at sessions, everyone will always kind of say 400s, things like that. And that's, again, another story of making sure you progress your training and you keep moving up. But yeah, I do like, some 500s at 1500 meter pace to know you're on it. But again, speak to the athlete. What do they think they need? If they think they need 300s at 1500 pace to show that they're in great shape, then that's way more important than what I think I need to see.
Yeah, very good point.
Yeah. Well, look, it's been great to chat to you today, Carl. And just before we finish, feel free to, do you want to say anything to any prospective Loughborough students out there?
Open day. Well, it depends when you're releasing it, I suppose. Open day, 26th of March. If you've not been in touch, get in touch with me. I think we've got 35 signed up at the moment. So we'll, please, yeah, get in touch and attend that. That should be good.
Perfect. Yeah, we're definitely out before then. But look, yeah, thanks for coming on, mate.
You should be out on Sunday.
Yeah,
across special.
Of course. No, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks very much. Fun.
Cheers.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.